Blog Talk Radio.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the FDH Lounge, another great mini episode of the FDH Lounge. We have a very special treat for you. Thank you for joining us today on the FDH Lounge. This is mini episode number 366. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris, to be joined shortly by FDH Managing Editor Jason Jones, another one of our fellow FDH Lounge original dignitaries. We're going to be doing a special treat today, especially for folks who really love quality TV, and one show in particular, the great show Justified on FX, which premieres season 5 this week. We're going to be going in-depth on the show, taking a look at it. Now that Jason has joined myself among the ranks of those who love the show, watch it on an in-depth kind of a basis, love to break it down. This is the first time we're getting a chance to do this on the program since Jason's period of immersion began last summer, so this should be a real treat for me, for him, and I think for all of you. Great to have him here with us today. My man, Jason Jones, from out in the great state of Colorado. How you doing, my man?
Oh, not too bad. Nice, cold, snowy day. What better than to talk about and watch a little Justified? I'll say this, though. Time was not on my side. I got about 8 minutes and 40 seconds in the season finale from last year. So I'll be chomping at the bit as soon as we get through all this. I'm sure it'll make it even more enjoyable to see that finale.
See, it's funny because I just got my season 4 DVD a couple of days ago, and in going through it, I made it all the way through Decoy, which I figured was probably the point at which it was safe to do this discussion with everything safely reestablished in my mind. I didn't know how much it would help, but it did, because I thought I had a pretty good handle on everything that happened last season, but there's no substitute for having it fresh in there, and it really did work on that basis. Let's review, first of all, how we got here. I will credit the great Scott Pullins from the 21st Century Media Alliance, one of our cohorts in there, and a friend of mine going all the way back to the college days at the old Harvard on the Hocking. He got me watching both Breaking Bad and Justified. I started Breaking Bad, caught up with seasons 1 and 2 on DVD. The first episode I ever saw of Justified, it was kind of similar. I saw him talking it up, I think, on Twitter. I was like, I guess I'll watch that tonight. That was the one where Boyd Crowder and Mags Bennett were at the meeting, the town hall meeting that was going to be discussing the Black Pike deal in late season 2. And that was the first one I ever saw, and I was hooked. I finished season 2. I watched seasons 1 and 2 on DVD subsequently. Had been talking it up to you for a period of time, Jason, but I'm going to keep it necessarily vague on the next particulars of this. But as has been mentioned, I think, previously, there's a couple of scripted projects that those of us in the 21st Century Media Alliance are working on. There's a really great one that you're in charge of where I'm sort of like your right-hand man on it. Sometimes it helps to envision characters in the form of an actor and to think of some of the actor's classic roles. You texted me something about Mark Harmon for somebody you were thinking of. I said, you need somebody younger. Mark Harmon is like eternally youthful for his age, but you're looking for somebody probably 20 years younger. I suggested to you that you check out Jacob Pitts, who is Tim Gutterson, the woefully underutilized Tim Gutterson on Justified, by the way. You couldn't find a whole lot on YouTube because FX does a pretty good job of clamping down on that, but you just decided to start digging into the show. It didn't take you long to get hooked, and in 16 days, you polished off the first 4 seasons.
Yeah, just a quick little background. If you go back and you hit up YouTube, you really can't find a whole lot. And one thing, you had sent me a link to a very short clip, and it, to this day, without context, is probably my favorite line or moment in the show that has nothing to do with any plot detail of any importance. And that's when Tim Gutterson says, "I can't carry a tune, I don't know how to shoot a basketball, and my handwriting is barely legible, but I don't miss." And right there, it was done. The vague description you're giving on a side project that we're working on, that was it. That line just sealed it. Done. Moving that got me thinking, and I believe FX was running reruns. And I just side note, I can't believe you got dropped into Max. It was your first experience, but
yep.
Mine was nothing like that. It was one of these episodes that's important to the greater storyline, but had no huge implications. It was actually kind of boring episode comparative to some of the ones that we've seen. But I just watching how the dialogue formed, the way the lighting of the show was, and some of the details that I'm sure we'll get into as to why it's so great. I said, you know, screw it. Rick's been banging the table on this one for at least a year now. It doesn't sound like my cup of tea, but after about 10 minutes of watching it on FX, I thought, I got to give this a shot. Went out and bought season one and season two, and yeah, knocked those out. I literally was watching anywhere between 5 and 10 episodes a day because in my mind at that moment, my time couldn't be better used on anything else.
I can understand that. I really can. And one of the great things with DVDs is without the commercials, you got it baked down to that, whatever it is, about 42 minutes, give or take.
Yeah.
So it really kind of helps you blowing through without the commercial breaks in there. And I can understand your skepticism at first, because it gets described as essentially like a modern version of a Western, which it is, an Old West kind of a motif. I watch the occasional Western, but it's not really I don't want to say that my sense is that if you've seen one, you've seen them all, but it's kind of limited as far as where it can go, if we're going to go to the whole literal Old West motif. But the theory of the show is that the Old West lives in today's rural America, and that the back roads and the hills of America, that's where today's Wild Wild West is, with some of the drug running, prostitution that happens back there, all of these quote-unquote hillbilly pursuits. That is the theory of the show. And Raylan Givens himself, the lead character as played by the excellent Tim Oliphant, wears, you know, he rocks one of these old-school Stetson hats and kind of models himself after the gunslingers of the Old West in America, late 19th century America, and he's somebody who emerges over the course of the show, read about them. He is the son of a criminal. This is what forms him, one of the big criminals over the course of the show, Arlo Givens, albeit Arlo is more sort of a beta dog to the bigger criminals, but he was a longtime criminal in Harlan County down there, and Raylan, as a form of escapism, read a lot of books, everything like that growing up. It surprises people to know that, because he sort of more comes off as not exactly vacuous, but a kind of a pretty boy kind of a guy who doesn't necessarily seem very deep aside from his anger. But looks are really kind of deceiving with him, as they are with a lot of folks on the show. The title of the show comes from, and I'd be very interested to know your thoughts in watching that initial cold open. The cold open of the pilot episode, there was a arch criminal down in Miami that Raylan had dealt with. I believe it was a drug runner down in Central America. He was working in the Marshal Service, and they were pursuing somebody down there. This guy murdered one of his colleagues, a very good friend of his, in gruesome fashion. Raylan had threatened his life. He said, "You have 24 hours to get out of town." And the guy's sitting there, and he's laughing at him. They're in a restaurant on a pier outdoors in Miami. And the guy's laughing at him until he thinks Raylan might be crazy enough to do it. He goes to draw on Raylan. Raylan blows him away. It is, quote-unquote, justified legally. But everything basically, it's such an S-storm down there that he gets reassigned to Eastern Kentucky out of the Lexington office and dealing with a lot of stuff in Harlan County where he grew up. So what were your thoughts in watching that scene there? How much did that have to do in the pilot, the scene that the show was named after, in terms of really hooking you in if you weren't already?
Well, before I go there, there's a line later on, I want to say in season four, where there's a guy that says, that threatens to, let's just say, deal with Raylan by mentioning mm-hmm. something about fixing his Gary Cooper hitch,
yes.
which is a neat little thing. And I had to Google it. I didn't know who Gary Cooper was. I'm not part of the big Western scene, but there are little things that get sprinkled in that make you go, okay, yes, I see that. And the cold open you're referring to is exactly what I think sucks you in. And anyone who watches these, we'll call them quality television shows, where there's a lot of thought and good writing put into it. If somebody tells you that Justified is a modern-day Western, you're probably not going to get it. That simple sentence doesn't really give it to you. But when you watch that cold open in the pilot episode, you see Raylan walking through, and if you peel back the imagery of, you know, the rich side of South Beach, Miami, you take away the bikini-clad women and the champagne glasses, and convert that over to, you know, a dust storm, you got a guy in cowboy boots and a cowboy hat walking down a long plank to essentially the guy on the other side of the standoff. They're sitting there facing each other, waiting and waiting for the other guy to make a move. And then finally one guy does, and the other guy ends in demise. It is literally one big visual metaphor for your typical Western-style standoff. The only difference here is you don't have one man facing the other from 20 paces away with their hand over their guns. Ultimately, the same result happens. Somebody draws, and then the other guy draws, and one of them dies. But yes, it absolutely just oozes of this sort of undertone that you see throughout the show of Raylan Givens is your modern-day John Wayne, almost, in a kind of cooler, younger, suave sort of version of himself. And even if you think that that doesn't appeal to you, I would almost be willing to bet money anyone who likes any good television, if you like Breaking Bad or Sopranos or whatever your thing is, if it was nominated for an Emmy, you would dig this show. If you're a Mad Men guy, you would dig this show. It really does appeal to everyone, even if it is carried in a vehicle that seems to appeal to very few.
Absolutely. And TV Guide referred to it as the best drama on TV. So it is a pretty much almost consensus critically acclaimed program. We're going to be talking about some of the elements that make it as great as it is. Although this is a season 5 preview that we're doing today, we'll kind of build to that. I had indicated to you off air, I didn't want to limit us just to talking about what happened last in season 4, even though season 4 was awesome, because this is the first time you and I have had a chance to do this, and I wanted to take advantage of seeing it through your eyes for all 4 seasons of the show, everything building, because that's the one thing you and I have agreed upon. This is a world that just keeps building there. It gets bigger. Every season has been better than the last. Arguably, some might say that 3 might have been a little bit better than 2. That might be kind of up in the air, but as far as, you know, every season thus far being better, it's almost always followed that pattern. There are a few things, few elements I know we want to talk about. And I appreciate the legwork you did, Jason, in emailing me some of this stuff for our discussion today. Some of the quotes, some of the dialogue on Justified, and also some of the character work. We'll start with the quotes. You emailed me a couple of the really, really good ones, and you've made some references already on that. But the banter that there is between characters and everything, and the way that they relate to one another. You have an instance on this show where even characters that are greatly at odds with one another, they're sort of bound together by the common experience of having grown up in that area. There is a bond between them that some of the outsiders don't exactly understand. And you will see conversations between Raylan and Mags Bennett, the arch criminal who is an enemy of his family. You'll see that. You'll see conversations Raylan with the sheriff, Hunter Mosley, the former sheriff who murdered his father in prison. And they're bantering back and forth about stuff. Granted, Raylan had been estranged from his father. But some of the instances of dialogue here that you had sent to me, there were some really, really good ones. One of the great ones was towards the end of last season, the really, really amazing episode that we've talked Convoy of, where Drew Thompson, this old D.B. Cooper-type criminal, is unearthed after 30 years of being hidden in Harlan County. Mickey Augustine, the underboss of the Detroit mob, has come down there. He's dealing with Boyd Crowder, who is Raylan's pretty much frenemy through the course of the show. They're at odds. They're on the other side of the law, but occasionally they have some common interests, and they were at least casual friends who Doug Cole together before they ended up on their disparate paths in life. Nicky Augustine is coming down to give orders to Boyd Crowder as far as the hunt for this criminal. And he's not very happy with Boyd at the moment, but he says, "I got to ask, where'd you get all those teeth?" Boyd says, "Courtesy of the American taxpayer while serving our great nation in Desert Storm." Nicky: "Man, I love the way you talk, using 40 words where four will do. I'm curious, what would you say if I was about to put 40 bullets through that beautiful vest of yours?" Boyd: "What are you waiting for?" Nicky: "Oh, you're cool, huh?" Boyd: "I tried to keep it to four words. You'll allow the contraction as one." I mean, there's just things back and forth there of how things are said. There's a rhythm to it. There's almost like, I think you've used the term, like a rural poetry that just really kind of sucks you in. You and I aren't of that world, Jason, but you and I just greatly appreciate it, as to so many others.
Yeah, the beautiful thing about this, and you get this from some of the great writers in modern television, is, you know, you read that on a page out of context and you think, well, that just sounds weird. But if you do it correctly, you can paint this picture of this world where this is what exists. And yeah, you and I may not be from that, you know, neck of the woods, so to speak, but the way the show is built, the way it's done, you absolutely believe with every ounce of your being that this is how they are there. This is what, as you said, kind of bonds these people together. That, and you see it all the time with Boyd and Raylan, who are, you know, friendly or at odds or at each other's throats, where it's not good enough to say the four words, because if you say four words, you're really not trying. And it paints this authenticity to the whole thing that really you look for. You can't wait for it. You look forward to it. It's part of the show. It's almost like it's the unseen character part of it. It's beautiful in its poetry, so to speak, but it's also just a really cool element to it. And Raylan and Boyd specifically, whether they're in conversations together or not, really do a great job of this sort of verbal song and dance.
It's really amazing how it goes through. There's a follow-up to the thing that I just read you, which is in the next episode, after Drew Thompson has been captured and the Detroit mob was thwarted in being able to get him, and Boyd and Nicky are sitting there in the aftermath. Boyd says to him, "Mr. Augustine, seeing as how Drew Thompson's already in the marshal's custody, why you're cutting off the tail of my cousin and offering him up is opaque to me, Nicky. I'm going to need Google Translate on my phone if I'm going to keep talking to you." So it shows you right there, the outsiders, right? Because Nicky's almost kind of speaking for the audience, because like I said, you're not of that world. I'm not of that world. A lot of us that are fans are not of that world. And we can't, like, directly relate to it. We don't know what it's like to have this kind of a bond. And, you know, we all came from the hills, even if we are at odds with one another, or maybe even, you know, if that's an understatement, we still have this bond between us, this way of speaking, this way of communicating with one another. And then I almost got the sense in that moment, Nicky's kind of speaking for the rest of us, like, wow, look at this. Look at what they're doing with this show.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what was really very interesting about season four was, if I'm not mistaken, it's the only time that we are taken out of greater Western Kentucky, where we're seeing characters talk and interact that just aren't part of this. From a different world, you know, the Theo Tonin character, the Nicky Augustine character, they bring back, you know, the rest of the world into the fold. And it's almost like, because we've been watching for so long and so used to what it's like in this justified world, it's almost like I can absolutely sympathize with the nature of their outsiderness, because it sticks out like a sore thumb, the fact that they don't possess this, I guess, charm, if you will. And it really creates a whole new dynamic. But, you know, we talked earlier about Mags, even Limehouse, who, you know, a black man in the rural Kentucky situation is not normal to this point. But when Limehouse is introduced, even though he looks different, kind of comes from a different fold, he still is absolutely of that place. So when these guys from Detroit are introduced, it's a completely new wrinkle in the situation and just makes for an even more dynamic season.
Absolutely. And before we get to some of the core characters around Raylan, let's talk about what you're discussing there with the casting of the show and with some of the people who have been a little bit more peripheral if you're looking at the big history of the show, but people who for at least a period of time were very important or people who are fairly consistently in the background going through with the show. Nicky Augustine, he was preceded as the Detroit Invader the previous season by Robert Quarles, who was another kind of contender for the throne of Theo Tonin. And again, it's hard to even know how to describe the guy. Somebody that had ice water in his veins, but was he had just such demons in his past as far as being a forced to be a male teen prostitute growing up, actually getting turned out by his own father. And because of that being repressed, was subject to sometimes substance abuse problems, which kind of flared up under the stress of coming down to Harlan County and trying to take over and fill the void of the great villain from the previous season, Mags Bennett, played by Margot Martindale. And it's very interesting to compare seasons two and season three. I said to you at the time when you were watching it that the popular opinion is that the show, at least going into season four, that it had peaked when Mags Bennett was the arch villain. Season four seems to be getting a lot of love from everybody, but short of that, that season two was the best it had ever been. You actually found Robert Quarles in some ways preferable to her as a villain because of some of the different layers that he had. Mags was pretty much this simple country woman who was a ruthless matriarch of her crime family. Her husband had passed away, left her in charge, and she ruled her boys with an iron fist and the weed business down there and some of the other things that went with it. So compare and contrast on that, Robert Quarles, Mags Bennett as lead villains.
Well, the important thing to look at here and not to get lost with is that the big difference for me is season three opened up scope and scale. Season three is a bigger season. Implications are farther reaching, as we eventually find out in season four. Whereas season two is still, it's small enough, it's still that, you know, everybody knows everybody thing, and yes, we unearth some strenuous ties between families and things, but Mags Bennett was, I think, such a huge fan favorite because first of all, she's a she, and she's literally walking around with, you know, iron balls, if you will. She does what she does, and she does it because no one's going to stop her because she's Mags freaking Bennett. And there's a whole thing to that. The way the season ends, and I don't want to give away every detail, but attracts viewers to the show. But there's the way season two ends is absolutely beautiful, and I don't think they could have done a better job. Now, as you mentioned, Mags is what she is. She is a Southern woman, and she's proud, and she handles her business the way business should be handled. Quarles is a totally different guy. He's a totally different character altogether. He has many flaws. He has, as you mentioned, layers. There's the whole upbringing that affects the way he does business, and there's the facade of him trying to keep straight with business versus everything else. And probably one of my favorite scenes of the whole season is when he's pretty much at his breaking point and he decides to take matters into his own hands, goes to the bar Raylan frequents. And basically, again, we have another one of these old school Western style standoffs where the townspeople are scurrying away to not be involved. It's very, has a nice Western theme to it. And you really start to see where Quarles is losing all grasp of his reality to the point where he's going to take on the great Raylan Givens. So layers and layers.
There is so much of that when you start to peel back the onion, no question about it. And when you're looking at some of the other characters, as we sort of build towards talking about the core characters of this thing, the casting has just been absolutely amazing. So many actors who do a tremendous job on this, and actresses as well. I'm using actor, I guess, more in the gender generic term. But when you're looking at it here, so many great ones, and you've enjoyed him in other roles and also on this show. Elston Limehouse, played by Mikelty Williamson, best known, of course, for being Bubba, the character in Forrest Gump, the doo-doo of shrimp so very much. Dickie Bennett, a craven son of Mags Bennett, somebody who is a complete and total coward, but everything that implies with that. He acts like a badass when he's got a gun on him or when he's got the upper hand. Jeremy Davis, what an amazing job of acting there. Arlo Givens, the no-good old man of Raylan, who is no longer with us, played by Raymond J. Berry, an amazing job by him. Going down the list here, Colton Rhodes last season, played by Ron Eldert, who's done a tremendous job in a lot of different character roles. He was set up as sort of the doppelganger, if you will, almost the bizarre world version of Tim Gutterson, who is Raylan's associate in the U.S. Marshals there, somebody who was a fellow veteran in Iraq and Afghanistan. Robert Quarles, we talked about as well. Judge Michael Reardon, we didn't see as much of him last season, played by Stephen Root, a really, really excellent character actor. You tend to, I guess, more associate him with comedic roles, but he's just somebody who shows up in a lot of stuff that you just really, really dig. He's so good. Bo Crowder in season one, played by M.C. Gainey. Two things that they did last year. If this was any lesser show, you would have looked at this as being stunt casting, but they made it work. They actually really made it work in a way that doesn't seem plausible if you didn't watch it. Nicky Augustine, the aforementioned underboss and would-be boss in the end, but didn't work out so well for him, of the Detroit Mafia, played by Mike O'Malley. Yes, the slightly chubby guy from Yes, Dear and all these other comedic roles over the years. Guy lost weight for the role, shaved his head, and played a badass that would make you pee your pants if you saw him walking down the street. It was amazing what they did with him. And Patton Oswalt playing Constable Bob, who's kind of a sidekick of Raylan's during the season. Somebody in local law enforcement that Raylan would enlist for some side kind of things whenever he needed something done, and something that just had in over his head flunky written all over him. But Constable Bob really kind of proves his mettle through the course of the year, and he's somebody that you're laughing at a lot of the time, but by the end you're laughing with him as much as you're laughing at him. And on any other show, you know, Graham Yost being the awesome showrunner that he is, and Tim Oliphant being a great executive producer on there as well, somehow or another, the powers that be creatively take these guys and fit them into roles that on paper you sit there and go, what the hell are they thinking? Jason, you there? Jason?
Hey, yeah.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that. But
I was gonna say that the Patton Oswalt thing was phenomenal, and for me is the benchmark for the casting. They make no apologies or no attempts to cast people for the sake of casting people. And when I heard Patton Oswalt, and I thought there's no way that works, and I can't imagine it working any better than it did. That long list that you came up with, O'Malley was phenomenal compared to what he's normally typecasted for. Matt is great. There's a whole list of characters on there that you could fill with just character actors, but they find a way to pluck these people out and fit them in maybe more perfectly than I've ever seen on any show ever before.
It's absolutely amazing, and as we start to build towards what's going on with season five, the other actors in here, some of the core ones in this, Wynn Duffy, who is played by Jerry Burns, is just an awesome, awesome actor. You had remarked to me that he is also on Breaking Bad as the drug counselor for Jesse during the season, playing completely a different role than he plays here. He's almost comic relief as a villain, but he's also somebody who's very, very menacing. It's just, it's hard to describe what he is. He starts off as sort of a beta male to the Detroit mob in running the Dixie Mafia down there and actually being an underboss for them initially and growing into a bigger role, I guess, as we head into season five. But the other core characters for the show, the ladies on there, there's often a debate of Ava v. Winona. Winona Hawkins is Raylan's ex-wife. She is now pregnant with his baby, but they have again split. She had been estranged from her husband, who was then killed. During that period of time, she reconciled with Raylan, gotten pregnant. They have split again, albeit Raylan is taking responsibility for the baby. Ava Crowder, just this awesome, hot, backwoods blonde chick who ends up becoming, she starts the series as she's married to Boyd's brother and murders him. Well, it's self-defense, I guess, but basically she's been abused by him, kills his brother. She was an enemy of Raylan's at that point, but they then became friends and are now engaged. Ava's going to be spending season five in the slam due to some crimes committed in season three and season four, but that's a real hot point right there. I guess we can stop before we get to some of the other ones. Ava v. Winona. There's a thing. A lot of women who are fans of the show, I see this on message boards, don't like Winona because she's a little bit skinnier, so it becomes, oh, this prissy bitch Winona, and, you know, she's a little bit more citified, you know, lives in Lexington than backwoods Ava, but, you know, they have very defined pluses and minuses between them.
Yeah, and I made no mistake about it. I'm definitely on Team Ava, if you will. It's funny, though, because this conversation keeps sparking up little references to Breaking Bad. And if anyone that's listening is a Breaking Bad person has never tried, Justify, here's some ideas. And just to go back real quick, Win Duffy, to me, to put it in Breaking Bad terms, feels like Saul Goodman, you know? Not the same job description, but sort of, you know, out for themselves, whatever makes them, you know, the most money or saves their hide, whatever. So anyway, if you like Saul Goodman, you love Win Duffy. Getting back to the women now, Ava Crowder is interesting because I remember the first time you introduced her, before you even see her on screen, you have Tim Gutterson, and he says something to the effect of, Ms. Crowder decided late last night to end her marriage with what's-his-face. And they think, okay, that's no big deal. Well, yeah, it is, because she severed the relationship with a 30-06, which tells you really all you need to know about Ava going forward.
Yeah.
She's a fiery, filled with piss and vinegar kind of woman when push comes to shove, whereas Winona's, you know, she's your typical professional woman who wants certain things and doesn't want certain things. And here's another correlation. After watching Breaking Bad, I don't hate Winona Ryder or Winona
Hawkins
anywhere near as much as I thought I did after experiencing Skyler White. So that's really not so much of a correlation. It's just that there are times where you see that Winona is kind of giving Raylan more trouble than he really deserves. But, yeah, it's a huge dynamic with the women from Mags all the way down. But in this case, these two play a recurring and never-ending sort of tug-of-war in their relationship with Raylan. Very interesting.
Absolutely, because Ava had always had a crush on Raylan growing up. When he comes back to town, she subsequently gets involved with him. Raylan ends up more or less dumping her for a fling with Winona. Winona then reconciles with her husband later on, gets back together with Raylan. But Ava holds that against Winona, that she's the one that broke them up. So there's a little bit of a rivalry between them. You talk about the casting also, as we kind of round out that part of it as well. So many of the folks on this show are part of some of the other quote-unquote TV snobs shows that are going these days. Walton Goggins, who plays Boyd Crowder in an amazing kind of a way, he has had a recurring role from time to time on Sons of Anarchy. You have Jim Beaver, who was the D.B. Cooper character last year, Drew Thompson, Sheriff Shelby, as he'd previously been known before his identity was outed. Of course, a gun dealer who shows up a couple different times on Breaking Bad. Not a huge role, but he was on there nonetheless. Tim Oliphant, in what I've told you, is not exactly an identical role, but a similar role when he plays Seth Bullock on Deadwood, the three-season show from HBO, which was an actual show kind of set in America's West, and he was actually playing a lawman at that time. So a little bit different of a character, but some similarities as well. You've got the core of this show here with them, the marshal who is head of the office in Lexington there, who runs the Eastern Kentucky office, Art Mullen, played by the great Nick Searcy, who is a somewhat kind of gruff, but, you know, understanding kind of a boss. And I don't mean to make that sound like a cliche, because he plays it in a folksy kind of a way, and you get this underlying sense of that he was kind of Raylan-esque when he was younger, so he doesn't like Raylan stepping over the line, but he realizes he's done it himself. And the other deputies in the office there, Rachel Brooks, who is played by Erica Tazel, who is a relatively young black woman who's in the office, who is they make pains to establish probably the smartest and most stable of the three deputies in that sense. And Tim Gutterson, the aforementioned deputy marshal played by Jacob Pitts, Iraq and Afghanistan veteran, a sniper par excellence, somebody who can shoot the apricot, in between somebody's head and spine. And but again, somebody who's probably got PTSD, probably got a little bit of a drinking problem. And I hope we get a chance to have those characters explored a little bit more going forward. We saw some of that in season four, where we saw a little bit more of them. And Gutterson had the storyline with his doppelganger in Boyd's crew. But I hope we see more of that going forward. It's just such an amazing group that's around Raylan.
Oh, it absolutely is. Couple quick little shots here. Rachel is, she's the dramatic relief, if you will. I absolutely love that character, and I love that they don't oversaturate the show with her either, but there's plenty of times where you just get the impression that one line to describe Rachel is not impressed with, you know, the shenanigans that occur. And that's just it, because she's just not going to put up with anybody's crap, and that's fine, and that's what she does. Gunnarsson, to be honest, long before the apricot situation ever unveiled itself, there's a scene in one of the early episodes where Art hands him a gun, and then he looks back at Art and says, "Do you want me to kill him, or you want me to wing him?" And Art looks at him and goes, "Oh, wing him," which, for those that don't know, is basically shots in the shoulder so they can't use their arms, which just speak to his lethality with that, with a sniper rifle. The other guys that you mentioned, it's just such a great collection of talent around this one focal character in Raylan Givens. It all works together completely. I mean, if someone said, "Here's the idea, rewrite it," I don't know that you could do a better job.
It is really, really tremendous. And as we go into season five here, just to kind of review a little bit and set the stage, season one was the re-immersion of Raylan Givens back into Eastern Kentucky. And, again, some of the crime things that were happening down in Harlan County, he started to get sucked into that with Boyd Crowder down there. Boyd had had a short-lived religious conversion after he had forced Raylan to shoot him, essentially. It was a kill or be killed situation in the pilot. Raylan shot him, almost killed him, and Boyd had what was legitimately at that point in time, although nobody believed it, a religious awakening. Had a little bit of a country kind of, not exactly a cult there, but a following of folks out there. They ended up getting wiped out by Bo's crew there. Bo Crowder essentially was the big bad of season one, along with the Miami cartel, who still had a little bit of an axe to grind against Raylan. Season two, of course, it was the Maggs Bennett situation there, the Bennett family. Season three, you had Robert Quarles coming down there trying to fill the void, teaming up with Wynn Duffy to try to fill the void of the Bennett family once they were gone, and to a certain extent the Crowder family from previously, while Boyd Crowder was trying to establish himself. So you had a little bit of what they would call in wrestling the heel versus heel dynamic of Boyd going up against Quarles and neither one of them being good guys. And also with Limehouse sort of stirring the pot there as another quasi-villain in the mix. It was an interesting stew in Season 3. Season 4, it was a little bit different. It was a season-long mystery. The hunt for Drew Thompson, when it became clear that he was still alive. Long story short, Arlo Givens had killed a state police officer at the end of Season 3. And ended up in jail, and he thought his get-out-of-jail-free card was to expose Drew Thompson. He had hung on to this evidence all these years, figured it was literally his get-out-of-jail-free card, and he unleashed this tremendous storyline through the course of the season. Again, I think each of the seasons has been better than the one before, except I slightly give the nod to 2 over 3. But in Season 5, one of the things that just really excited me, one of these tiny things I picked up upon, there's going to be the Crow crime family that's going to be very much out there. Daryl Crow Jr., played by Michael Rapaport, Wendy Crow, played by Alicia Witt, who may get surprised, involved with Raylan in some way. But I love me some Dewey Crow, one of the finest pure comic relief characters on TV. Damon Harriman, a guy who's actually an Australian, I understand it, but somebody who has that backwoods accent and effect and everything just absolutely nailed. I was so excited to see the Crow family was going to be in there. Dewey had referred to his family previously as being the case, so we're going to see him. We've already seen him in the promos here, just a little bit of a flash. He's not going to be a big part of this because clearly he's not the brains of the outfit, but I am just so happy to be getting Dewey Crow back on my screen this year. And you have to assume that they're going to be rivals of Wynn and Boyd, who are now firmly working together. They're controlling the heroin trade through the course of Kentucky. And it'll probably be a rivalry coming between their crime organizations before it's all said and done, maybe shades of Season 3. But knowing this show, it'll be in a different way.
Yeah, I saw the, you know, the breadcrumbs myself, just on the cast list. But I can't wait to see what Michael Rapaport does with it. He's generally playing the, you know, the token New York Jew, and that's really not going to work in this scenario. So I can't wait to see what he does with that. And you've got to think that, that the Crow element will play a strong part in the plot lines of this season. It is interesting that the promos that have been run for Season 5 show Boyd Crowder saying, you know, let's get down to business. So I get the impression there's going to be a lot of staking claim to territory and being able to control what's technically yours or not yours. And Dewey Crow is great. He actually had a guest starring appearance on the show. I can't remember now. Some new futuristic cop show that's on Fox this year. The second I saw him, I thought, oh, Dewey Crow. Let's see what we're going to do with this. And it wasn't anything like Dewey Crow, naturally. But he's such a great character. He's kind of the bubbling idiot that's only there because he's a warm body to fill a job. You're almost more worried that he's going to screw it up than get it right. But love his character, and I can't wait to see what the rest of the family is like. And I got to think you're right. They're nothing like him. But there are references as you go back, and we definitely recommend you start with the pilot of Season 1 and carry it on through. But you'll notice there's one that sticks out in my mind when Raylan is transporting Dewey as U.S. Marshals do, and he makes a reference to, hey, if we stop over, we can go say hi to my kin over in such and such. So clearly his family is prominent in the area, has done some illegal activity, which means hopefully in Season 5 they will do more illegal activity.
Yep, last great example of the dialogue, Season 3, when Dewey had been kidnapped by somebody who was running a scam on him that he cut out his kidneys and Dewey had to steal a bunch of money to get him back. Raylan caught up with him. He was like, hey, if you're able to piss, you still got your kidneys. Dewey starts to go to the bathroom. He's like, oh, Raylan, this is great. I got 4 kidneys. So we've reached the end of our window. Thank you so much, Jason. Can't wait for Season 5. We'll be tracking it together on the show. Thank you all for tuning in, everybody. FPH Lounge Mini Episode number 366.